Bhagavad Gita is this, chapter 9, the most confidential knowledge, text number 23. Yepyanya devata bhakta edante sharyanvita tepimam eva kondeya edantya vidipurvakam yea, those who api, also, anya, of others, devata, gods, bhakta, devotees, idante, worship, sharaya, anvita, faith, te, they, api, also, mam, me, eva, only, Kondeya, O son of Kunti, Idanti, they worship, Avidipurvakam, in a wrong way. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Those who are devotees of other gods and who worship them with faith actually worship only me, O son of Kunti, but they do so in a wrong way. Purport. Persons who are engaged in the worship of demigods are not very intelligent, although such worship is offered to me indirectly. Krishna says, for example, when a man pours water on the leaves and branches of a tree without pouring water on the root, he does so without sufficient knowledge or without observing regular principles. Similarly, the process of rendering service to different parts of the body is to supply food to the stomach. The demigods are, so to speak, different officers and directors in the government of the Supreme Lord. One has to follow the laws made by the government, not by the officers or the directors. Similarly, everyone is to offer his worship to the Supreme Lord only. That will automatically satisfy the different officers and directors of the Lord. The officers and directors engage as representatives of the government, and to offer some bribe to the officers and directors is illegal. This is stated here as avidipurvaka. In other words, Krishna does not approve of the unnecessary worship of the demigods. Yepyanya devata bhakta yidante sharyanvita tepimameva kuntiya yidantya avidipurvakam. Those who are devotees of other gods and who worship them with faith actually worship only me, O son of Kunti, but they do so in the wrong way. You probably heard this verse before. Does anyone know that the Sanskrit for this verse about watering the root of the tree? Ananda, you must know it.
I know that it exists.
Oh, and you have your computer. It begins with Yatatura Mula Nishetrinena Tripyanti Tatskanda Bujo Pushaka Pranaharatshai Ditendriyanam Tataiva Sarvaham Atuteja. You heard that before? Yes, you have. Just don't remember. So, yata, just as, toror, what does toror mean? Tree, yes. Where do you remember the tree from? Toror. Amarina, amarina. Yata, toror, mula, what is mula? Mula, in English, mula is money. It's a slang for money in English.
Mula also means in our language an S, no?
An S.
Working S.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and burden. Well, it's a language lesson, at least. Yatatara mula nisechanena. Nisechanena, you probably know. It means to water or something. To pour water on the
road.
Yeah. Yatatura mula nishate. Tripyanti. What does tripyanti mean? Tripti. Go on a trip, you know. No. What's that? Satisfied, yeah, too. Satisfied. So yatatura mula nishate. Tripyanti tat skanda. What does skanda mean? Skanda purana. Branch. Yeah, trunk. Oh, yeah. Branch.
Trunk.
Trunk, yeah. It says trunk, okay. Big branch. Itatara mula nishet trityanti tatskanda bujo prashaka. Oh, actually, bujo prashaka. Shaka means, I'm thinking, shaka is actually the branches and the twigs. So just like when you water the root of the tree, then automatically you satisfy trityanti, the trunk, the leaves, and the branches. Pranahara tad tendriyanam, or by supplying food to the stomach, then tataiva sarvahanam atuteja. So in the same way, if you serve achuta, then automatically tataiva sarvahana, all the different parts of the body, the demigods, everyone is satisfied. So how is that possible, that satisfying one person, you can satisfy everyone? Well, first of all, the amount of water we're going to pour on the root of the tree, if it satisfies Krishna, that's good. I don't think everyone's going to be in ecstasy by our service. We do a little service. We offer ghee lamp and everyone in the room is floating in ecstasy. But at least we're pouring something in the right direction. It may not be very much, but something. In any case, the story is when Devrasa Muni when Duryodhana sent Devrasa Muni to the forest where the Pandavas were in exile, he sent them with his 50,000 followers. Just at the time, it was lunchtime. Now, Draupadi was awarded a very special plate that as long as the Pandavas and herself didn't eat, the plate would actually supply unlimited amounts of food. It just so happens the plate was supplied by Devrasa Muni. Now, Yudhisthira Maharaj was in the forest exile, but he was also, along with him, were many Brahmins and sages who wanted to associate with Yudhisthira Maharaj in the forest. So every day Draupadi would use the plate and prepare a prasadam, and the prasadam would be unlimited. I guess she just had to prepare a little bit, and it was just kept on coming. And the pot would keep on serving the same prasadam to everyone. So everyone was quite happy. There was no question of not having enough prasadam. But as soon as she took prasadam, that was it. It was all over. Duryodhana understood that, and so he timed it exactly so that Devrasa Muni and his sages, 50,000 sages, would arrive in the forest when there would be no more prasadam left. Now, Devrasa Muni is known as Atosha. What is that word? Ashutosha. That he's easily satisfied and he's easily angered because he's an expansion of Lord Shiva. Now, if you're in the forest, there's no prasadam, and you've just got an advertisement that Draupadi's the best cook in the world and she has your plate, so there shouldn't be any problem. And you arrive there just in the time, there's nothing to eat. Yudhisthira Maharaj decided to just tell Devrasa Muni, sure, no problem. We'll pick a lot of leaves off the trees. You're all sages. We'll cook a few of them just in case someone likes to cook meal. But we heard most of you sages, you're on a raw diet. Vegan also. So, so Draupadi was completely in anxiety. The Pandavas were in anxiety. We're going to all get cursed by Devrasa Muni. And then Krishna appears. He says, hey, Draupadi, anything to eat? And then she's completely in a wreck. You know, my God, the sages are going to curse us. And now Krishna came and we can't give him anything either. So Krishna said, just take a look. So they found a little bit of sabji in the bottom of the pot. He said, well, anyhow. Krishna. So he gave it to Krishna. Krishna ate it and he was completely happy. And the whole universe supposedly felt completely satisfied. So here was Devasa Muni and the 60,000, 50,000 or 60,000, I couldn't count right. It was too many to count. They thought, my God, we're completely full. We can't take any more prasadam. And we go there and they prepare this elaborate meal for us. What are we going to do? It's going to be a real embarrassment. So they fled. Devasa Muni and hey, Devasa Muni, prasadam's ready. Come and eat. And they all, there's no one there. They all just left. So that's one of the indications that if Krishna is satisfied, then everyone's satisfied. Of course, this is a special instance. Krishna manifest showed how he's satisfied. In any case, the point is that Krishna is the source of the reservoir of all pleasure. And just like when you have a fire, at the fire, all the little sparks in the fire depend on the big fire for their maintenance, for their existence. So similarly, all of us, we're all part and parcel of Krishna, but Krishna is the big fire, and we only experience our natural pleasure when we experience Krishna's pleasure. There has to be some reservoir of pleasure that we experience in order to experience pleasure. And since in the spiritual world everyone is experiencing Krishna's pleasure, therefore everyone becomes as good as the reservoir of pleasure. Everyone is reflecting the original unlimited pleasure, and therefore everyone is a source of unlimited pleasure. Because everyone is always thinking about Krishna there, who's the source of unlimited pleasure. So similarly here, with all our elaborate arrangements that we're going to make in order to spread Krishna consciousness, but the real thing is to think about Krishna. Not only to think about Krishna, but to think about Krishna as a result of trying to please him. Kamsa also was thinking about Krishna, but he wasn't trying to please Krishna. And therefore, he was not able to spread Krishna consciousness very easily. Because he did get into the Krishna book. So that's pretty good too. But as far as actually being an instrument for Krishna consciousness, he wasn't very useful. On the other hand, anyone who tries to think about Krishna, and of course, anyone who's doing service for Krishna and for his mission, to some extent or another, they must be trying to think about Krishna. Otherwise we can't, this body will not be utilized under the internal energy unless it's following some, to some degree or another, Krishna's instructions. But there are greater and lesser degrees of service to Krishna. Generally, those who are engaged in karma yoga and jnana yoga, which are more or less under the varnashram system, those who do devotional services, Prabhupada said, but they have a desire to fulfill. They say to be acting in karma yoga. Those who know that the goal is Krishna, but are addicted to the fruits of activity, are said to be acting in karma yoga. So of course, those in the terms of the varna and ashram system, they're known as the shudras and the vaishyas. They know in the Veda culture at least that Krishna is the object of their service, but they also want the results. They want to become free from distress and they want a happy, enjoyable life in the material world. And those who know that the goal is Krishna, but take pleasure in mental speculation to understand Krishna, they're said to be acting in jnana yoga. So that's the kshatriyas and the brahmins. And those who see Krishna completely, in full Krishna consciousness is said to be acting in bhakti yoga or the full yoga. That's the devotees. In any case, we're trying to act at least as devotees. We may not be devotees. I mean, devotees means they're devoted to Krishna. We hardly know Krishna. And generally, our greatest devotion appears at the time of prasadam. In any case, that is a kind of devotion because Atakshi Krishna Namadi Nabravet Grayam Indriya. We can engage the tongue in Krishna's service by talking about him or eating prasadam. But that's usually our closest association with Krishna that we come to. Our most intimate association is at the time of prasad. But that is an association also with Krishna. But it's not up to the full standard of devotion quite yet. But if we engage our tongue in speaking about Krishna and tasting Krishna prasadam, then gradually devotion to Krishna will actually be aroused. And then we can actually be said to be a devotee at the stage of bhava or prema. Other than that, we're aspiring. Because if we come to the stage of nishta, we can say we're devoted because we're steadily engaged in Krishna's service. So that's really beginning of devotion. But as that steadiness comes about, as you put the iron in the fire, it gets hotter and hotter and hotter, and then it acts like fire. So when we come to the stage of nishta, which is the beginning of pure devotional service, then as we steadily engage, then we become more and more absorbed in Krishna consciousness, and the purification becomes more and more intense. Just like when you have a snowball at the top of the hill, it rolls down, it gradually picks up momentum and becomes bigger and bigger until it becomes a big ball of, by the time it heats, comes an avalanche. So that's with devotional service too. Once one can come to the stage of nishtha, that when devotional service becomes spontaneous, then it advances relatively much more rapidly than we're at now. The real hurdle is usually an artha nivritti. And before that, if one can just fix his mind and steadily perform devotional service, then an artha nivritti is more likely to happen if one is actually trying for it. Otherwise, if one is not interested in artha nivritti, one can become steady, but it may not produce such purification so quickly. But if one actually tries to fix his mind upon Krishna and give up bad habits, then the result is that one comes to the stage of nishtha more rapidly than otherwise. And at the stage of nishtha, when it actually develops, especially ruchi, some taste, when one's spiritual senses are aroused, then everything else becomes more or less insignificant compared to Krishna consciousness. Now we have a taste between, you know, reading some magazine and Bhagavad Gita. It may be a struggle. Maybe you struggle to try to read Bhagavad Gita, that is. But when we actually become Krishna conscious, then reading Bhagavad Gita becomes pleasurable, actually transcendentally pleasurable, beyond whatever material experience we may have had. And therefore it becomes spontaneous to read the Bhagavad Gita instead of some other book. Similarly, devotional service becomes natural and spontaneous, and one cannot eventually think of doing anything else except for that, because associating with Krishna is so pleasurable that one cannot live without Krishna, just like a fish cannot live without being in the water. But here it mentions that there are demigods. Demigods are also powerful living entities in this world who are jivas in a particular body provided by the material energy by Krishna's arrangement, who bestow benedictions upon the living entities, generally unknown to us in the form of rain, form of light and heat, etc. But those who have some Vedic knowledge, they can understand if you want, you can get certain special benedictions from the demigods if you offer certain special sacrifices to them. And they can give the limits of material sense gratification. And that's explained elaborately in the second canto. You can get a good wife, you can get health, you can get riches, you can get so many different things if you worship the right demigod in the right way. But as Krishna says, whatever benediction we get is limited and temporary. Even if we go to the planets of the demigods, we're only going to be there for what will seem to be a relatively short period of time, because there's too much enjoyment, material enjoyment there. And even if you're there for millions of years, it goes rather quickly. The difficulty is you don't know where you're going to come next. You fall down at the end of Kali Yuga. Even if you come back to Slovenia, it's the end of Kali Yuga. it's not going to be very pleasant. You come back as a little kid in someone's womb and they keep on patting your mother's stomach and say, when's dinner? You think, my God, I think I'm going to stay here for some time. I'm not getting out of here. So it'll be rather unpleasant to hear people talking about, I can't wait till the kid comes. I'm hungry. So better to not worship the demigods, even though the allurement is quite great for materialists, to hear that you can go there and you can live for millions of years and everything there, the prasadam is great, expert cooks there, there's Nandakandana forest where everything is comfortable, and the women are actually women and the men are actually men there. So it sounds alluring. Let's go there and find out. You know, maybe on the way to Krishna Loka, I can make a stop, check it out. only for a day or two, just a break. It's a long trip. I heard to Loka Vrindavan, so we might as well have a little break on the way. Not a good idea. In any case, one should try to develop a taste of Krishna consciousness in this lifetime, because if one gets allured to the material, to heavenly planets, it can be a big deviation. It's like Vishwamrita Muni, who's meditating for 60,000 years, and Krishna sent Menaka, as we know. Now, he thought that I'm only going to open my eyes for one moment, just to see what I'm going to. I'm not going to do anything. I just want to take a peek and see what I'm giving up. And he opened his eyes and said, well, this is too good to refuse. No one's going to blame me. I mean, look at the lady. So he fell down for 100 years. Then, of course, we know he went back for another 60,000 years meditating. And then Indra sent another lady, and by this time when he heard the ankle bells, he was so frustrated. They're trying to get me to fall down again. So he opened his eyes and said, he was going to say, get out of here, but he was so angry. Flames from the eyes, flames came out of his eyes, and he burnt the lady to ashes. So this time he fell down due to anger. So then he had to go back to meditate for another 60,000 years. And as we heard, the only thing that happened is Brahma came and gave him second initiation. So, luckily we're more merciful in ISKCON. But we don't quite make Brahmins on the standard of Vishwamrita Muni. He became a real Brahmin. In any case, the point is that material world, everyone is trying to get something out of it. That's why we came here. Mainly we're trying to become powerful. We're trying to get material resources so we can protect ourselves from death and we can enjoy ourselves, whatever little we can get out of the material energy, squeeze out of it. In any case, worshiping or performing your work in current society, it's not very productive, as we can see. So many people are in unemployment. The conditions we live in are rather primitive. We're just above the cave standard nowadays. But if you, previously people had fresh air, they had clean water, they had delicious food, they had wonderful relations with each other. Relatively speaking, material life was rather pleasant. And in the heavenly planets, even it's hundreds of times more pleasant than on this planet. So it may allure a materialist that if I've got to live in the material world, I might as well live up to a good standard. And if I have to worship the demigods, I might as well do it. And in the previous ages, there were abilities. You could actually, if you were powerful enough, you could actually perform the sacrifice. You had the ghee, you had the gold, you had all the jewels, you had the Brahmins to chant the mantras, and everyone who participated would get benefited. So the whole society is cooperating for Yajna Vai Vishnu. And they are all getting benefit from it. But nowadays, no one does any yajna because there's no gold, there's no jewels, there's no Brahmins to chant the mantras. And therefore, the only worship in this age that can take us beyond the material existence which is available. Because if people don't know about the demigods, they'll settle for something insignificant. This insignificant sense gratification that's available nowadays. The one drop in the desert that people are running after. But in this age, Harinam Sankirtan can bring us to the highest stage of experience possible. Experience that's not even available in Vaikuntha if we chant Hare Krishna in the right way, with the right attitude, with the right consciousness, which has to be developed by tapasya and by gyan. By gyan we can learn how to perform, fix our minds upon Krishna, that's called tapasya, and in the right mood of devotion, and then we can experience unlimited happiness, which goes on forever. Shudyat tasmai brahma sokyam tvanantam. And then the demigods will not seem very attractive. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
So Maharaj Krishna says in that we should not worship demigods, but I think a few verses later he says that he's the one who strengthens the faith in the one who worships.
He strengthens faith in anything. You worship a movie star, he'll strengthen your faith in it. Otherwise, if we want to be in Maya, then Krishna gives us all the ability to be in Maya. Without Krishna giving us faith, which means experience, helping us squeeze out a little bit of experience from whatever we're worshiping. Without Krishna enabling us to do that, we wouldn't have anything to do in this world. So it's Krishna's everything. Nowadays people don't worship demigods. They worship some sports star. How much nectar is there in worshiping someone who's kicking a ball around? But they do it. And they, you know, to the largest extent possible. I mean, the enthusiasm, you know. What to speak of that? They see some movie, Spider-Man. And I don't know about here, but in America, you see little kids walking around in a spider uniform. Thinking they become a spider. How wonderful. So, think worship a spider, you know. They can worship anything. Krishna does that. They have to worship something, so the best thing around they worship. And Krishna arranges that. We're worshipers by nature. So just like we're worshiping our present material bodies that we're in. So we'll worship some body which is bigger than us, stronger than us, faster than us. And Krishna does that. Helps us do that. Because nowadays you can see people have become more and more degraded. They don't worship demigods. They worship the lowest things possible. Prabhupada said, in the 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentions that during World War II, people worship in India, they're worshiping Hitler. Because they were making money from the black market. So they're doing actually puja to Hitler. Or sometimes they go underneath a tree, because they hear a ghost is living there and they worship the ghost. That means they'll become a ghost. So worship is there. Everyone's worshiping something. Nowadays you see people walking around, you know, taking snapshots of themselves. They worship their dead bodies. Anything else? Thank you very much. Kuala, Bhagavad Gita ki jai.